SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. A beautiful fall morning here, and ideally a beautiful fall weekend across the racing world. We'll touch on, I think, everything. That includes some recapping yet from the weekend, some news and notes, a lot of news and notes with the DRF correspondents like Marty McGee and Jay Pribman and Dave Grenning. In addition to their normal coverage, we're going to start to hit the divisions. We'll, like we do every year, we'll start to go around a couple of times between now and Breeders' Cup, and we'll get the field prospects and some of the potentials, particularly watching now, starting to very carefully tab Euro involvement, the juvenile turf races, and the juvenile sprint, the turf, the mile, the filly and mare turf. Get a handle on all of those. And there was quite a bit. In fact, I spent a good portion of the morning updating the list that I maintain, and I was actually surprised how many names kind of fell off the lists. And we'll get Marty. In fact, Marty will start us off in about 10 minutes or so with Keeneland action. And today, you know, the last two big stakes of the meet. You got the contest too this weekend. In fact, Nick Tamaro, we missed Nick last week. Nick on his way to Keeneland, and he'll participate tomorrow and Sunday. So we'll get a little cross country pick four action with Nick. There was no cross country last week. This week there'll be three races from Keeneland: 8th, 9th, 10th, and the 8th and 9th from Belmont. And in fact, that 8th. I was a little surprised that they used the 8th as opposed, which is a maiden special, which is fine. But there's the Floral Park. There's the nice turf sprint. And we are going to get some news from Marty because of the stake today and the anticipated scratches of a couple of important members of the Buffalo Trace, Franklin County. There's horses waiting on the AE list to get in, and it seems like they're going to get in, two of them, because word circulating yesterday, no Hotshot Anna and no Goldwood. Goldwood cross-entered in New York, and Goldwood apparently intended for that Floral Park where she's going to be favored. But I suppose that Jorge Duarte thought that feels that it's a slightly easier spot, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of speed. There was a lot of speed in the Buffalo Trace. We'll see what Marty thinks. No reason to speculate until we talk to him. But as an FYI, just looking at this, the AEs, you had a couple of big prices. I'm sure that. That Andrew McKeever, well, not McKeever, because he was looking at MTO, but Ransack and Tito tonight for Cundiff and Vance, respectively, look to draw in both big prices. I'm looking at the allowance. What is wrong with me? Well, for one thing, we're not operating with really all that well with the eyes. But make it Ian Wilkes, La Dame Blanche, and Take These Chains for Ben Colebrook. They look to draw in to the Buff Trace, the grade three. So we'll talk to Marty. Save that for, for him. The Queen Elizabeth tomorrow, of course, and one of the last big opportunities for age restriction and the three-year-old fillies and mares. And boy, Chad Brown bringing a loaded wagon with Cambier Park and with Cafe Americano and Regal Glory. And I, you know, Cambier Park, I get it. She's 8-5, but I don't see why is she that much more likely than Cafe Americano or Regal Glory, for that matter, among the Chads. Then there's some other considerations in this group, including the Invader Castle Lady. We'll see what Mart thinks there. A couple of good other spots. There's a 50 claimer and a maiden special weight for 3 and ups going 6 on the dirt. Those are the other two legs of the cross country pick 5, New York and Kentucky. Get ready for that. We'll talk to Ron Gierkink back up to Woodbine and the Pattison International. Yesterday started to mention the way those fields came together, and they're nice, the three races, even just the 6 in the Canadian International, but the E.P. Taylor and the Near Arctic, the grade 2 with a group of 9 led by Cassie, Blind Ambition, Yorkton in there for Stuart Simon, and Ravelli. Ravelli's been he's a regular presence at Woodbine. And then the E.P. Taylor, the fillies and mares, going 1.25 miles on the grass. And invariably, we've always seen Euros show up for this, and they've won their share. Red Tea for Joseph O'Brien, 3-1. But Kevin Attard with Starship Jubilee prepped successfully for this. Simon Crisford, Imperial Charm, Invade, so does Durance for Peter Sheeran. So a lot of interesting participants. Holy Helena, who's been pointing for this for an extended period. And then the Canadian International. So we'll talk to Ron Gierkink in hour 2. In fact, I'll give you the whole lineup with Marty and Jay Pridman. Lots of news with Jay, and he'll also provide us with updates in his 2 categories and his 2 divisions. Nick Tamaro en route to Keeneland. Ron Gierkink. We'll get to Ed and James, Scully and DeRosa. Get some plays from them, see what they think. And as mentioned, who mentioned it the other day? Maybe Dick Powell. The opportunity to start looking at the Brisnet PPs, they're out. So you can go through those and just get a feel for the fields. I mean, there's a lot of extraneous horses included in that package, but better to have them and not need them than to need them and not have them. Hour 3, Hammer, Professor Hammerly, the distinguished Professor Hammerly, will join us from the Professor's Lounge at University of Arizona. Jeff Siegel, and we'll talk to Jeff about Breeders' Cup preparations. We'll get sort of a primer. We talked a little bit about the work side of things, but I want to get Jeff's, you know, overall, you know, how much race watching do you do? How much, you know, what his advance work entails. And Dave Grenick will round out the DRF coverage. And Dave, of course, the juvenile annually. And there was a couple of things in Dave's updates on the list that were intriguing, including the fact that Greenlight Go is not necessarily a cross out for juvenile. So we'll see what they've got most recently late in the week from Jimmy Jerkins. Tom Robbins is going to join us as well this morning. You may have seen that I put a tweet out with the lineup, and Tom most recently was on the show with his, you know, earlier work at Del Mar, but he's going to join us to pay tribute to Sherwood Chillingsworth, as I mentioned yesterday, Chili's passing. And there was really a nice outpouring yesterday and since the news broke, just, you know, honoring his memory. And I didn't want to go through the week without having somebody that was really close to him. And Tom Robbins' father, and of course the Robbins family, synonymous with California racing in so many ways, but Doc Robbins. And Chili, instrumental in founding Oak Tree. And if you want to relate or you know, think back to a kindler, gentler time and atmosphere, and it's not even that long ago, but the Oak Tree meet and the Oak Tree concept was really just a different kind of atmosphere with the charity work that was involved and so forth. But it Oak Tree hosted four Breeders' Cups, and I was out there for at least two. At least two. One in the 90s, which was my first time at Santa Anita. And then, you know, more recently when I got to meet and we had Chili on the show. But Tom Robbins grew up around Chili with him, you know, as a family friend. And we'll get a much more intimate portrait. I'm sure Jay Privman will have you know, an appreciation as well, and Hammer, of course, later. And I could just think that several times being, you know, working in Hammer's office, and Chili would breeze in. His office was a couple of doors down, and it was just affable. He was like he was sort of, he had kind of almost a Bob Keechum, Captain Kangaroo. He had sort of that big kind of teddy bear feel, and was really admired and appreciated by everybody around Santa Anita. And it was not the way things unfolded or evolved was really not right, frankly, but as the Oak Tree entity was pushed out, and the Stronach team took over everything, all the dates, and didn't care to have Oak Tree involved. I mentioned Dick. I should, as we go, because I probably, if I don't do it, it'll slide away. Last night in that 11-horse debutante, of course, the favorites ran 1-2. New York Groove for John Bork. Commonwealth New Era Racing, Antonio Gallardo. Bean, who was the slight favorite, a little over 6-5 over New York Groove, was second. They really spread out in that race. Did you see it? There was 3-4 lengths between everybody, it seemed. So, 2-year-old filly by Verrazano, bred by Bonchance Farm. There you go. That was your stake action yesterday. No stake at Keeneland. There were. I'll slip in it with Marty. I'll save the couple of those races we talked about, including two North American invaders, or some interesting storylines. And great job by Seth Merrow, by the way, yesterday. Let's take a break. Weekend preview. Marty McGee starts it off.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Come on, baby.
We're back at the races coming up on 20 into hour one on the weekend preview, and Marty McGee standing by. Not a week seems to go by, Marty, when there isn't just a parade of fascinating news emanating from Kentucky. Good morning. Mart.
What's going on, Vic? What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk Keeneland. I want to talk your filly and mare sprint. But first, what's the week been like with the, you know, follow-up and the fallout from the Churchill Turfway acquisition?
I don't know. You know, it's just like we talked about before. It's their way to get their foot in the door casino-wise up in northern Kentucky. So as a byproduct, for the horsemen, it couldn't have got much worse than what Turfway was the last, I don't know, 6 or 8 years. So it's good in terms of the guys who are going to stick around here for the winter the way they used to, or they're going to again, or whatever. But I don't know what they have in mind for this coming winter, but looking down the road farther, you would have to think it's going to be a good thing for the circuit. It's never going to solidify in terms of a year-round circuit the way it is in Southern California or even New York. You know, Aqueduct as good as it is in the winter. Your bigger guys are going to head to Gulfstream Fairgrounds in Oaklawn, but you know, overall, it's got to be a good thing for the horsemen. But Churchill is just—you know—let's be honest. They're doing it to get their money from the machines when we come online. You know, first, they can get it with the horse racing historical, whatever they call those slots things. And but then when we have the full blown pick, that's what they're looking at.
Well,
whenever that happens.
When that happens, and sports gambling too, the Kentucky legislature will get to that in their next go around. Undoubtedly, they kind of ran out of time this the past session. But you know, this week, the reason I bring it up, this week there was the formal KHRC stamping, and there's also the speculation that the two extra days that Kentucky Downs asked for, that they're going to get those 2 days and be able to run a total of 7 days. The most significant part of that KHRC approval was really the news of the doubling of the purse structure overnight, basically, that Churchill will pump those purses up by 100%, essentially. And I floated the idea that the Jim Beam is going to be a big, the Jeff Ruby is going to be a very big beneficiary of this, and it will not surprise me if there isn't some bonus tied to it, and maybe some way to tie, you know, things like the fairgrounds, winning a couple of races either at fairgrounds and or at Turfway toward Derby. There's the potential here for a dirt track. A dirt training track is going to be added, which could, you know, be a dirt track for the Jim Beam. I keep saying the Jim Beam, the Spiral, the Jeff Ruby. I thought there was a lot that went on this week, below the surface.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about tying the Derby to some of the Churchill-owned tracks. Perhaps, you know, they haven't really done that, have they? At Fairgrounds, which they've owned for a long time, so. The galleryfurniture.com or the Vinery or the or the Jim Beam or the Spiral or whatever you want to call it, it had gotten so bad they downgraded it to a 20-point race as opposed to a 50, which it had been for most of its history since they came online with the point system in 2013. So I would imagine they would go back to a 50, if not a, I don't know, about a 100-point race, but yeah, and sure. Why? I don't know if they would do that or not. I mean, there's so many gimmicks now that I don't know if they want to do that with the Jeff Ruby or not.
Well, they certainly seem ready to throw the weight behind the facility, which is great. I got a kick out of Chipbox tweet. The day that the news broke and Chip Box said, wake up this morning and I work for Churchill Downs.
Yeah. You know, I saw him here at Keeneland last week and he was a happy guy. You know, he's like, he didn't say it, but he the way he shook my hand and looked at me, he's like, you don't have to call me and I give you bad news all the time anymore. So, yeah.
I love it, and of course the other news out of Kentucky Downs, they're getting rolling on their expansion, and 25, $35 million upgrades and so forth. So, pretty good week around the bluegrass, and let's talk about the racing at Keeneland as well. Go back to last week, Marty, and your thoughts about the opening weekend, the 2-year-olds in particular. I thought I was amazed that the wins were so authoritative, by British Axiom and Maxfield.
Yeah, British Idiom for Cox and Maxfield for Brendan Walsh. By the way, you called it about Brendan Walsh. last week on the show. You said that he's sitting on a big meet, and he's won, I think, three races now. And Extravagant Kid, what a horrible trip that horse had in the Woodford. That horse might have won. I mean, probably got beat 10 lengths, but he might have won. That's how bad his trip was. But anyway, we had Dennis's moment here as one of the favorites for the Jubal. Now we've got Maxfield for Walsh. So Kentucky is doing its part in contributing to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Brad Cox is just loaded. He's got Arklow, and he's got British Idiom, and he has Covfefe, and I think he was sitting on another one, too, if I'm not mistaken. But, those were some great results. We also had Kamari in the Juvenile Turf Sprint win from last to first, and all she had done before was be a front runner. So Wesley was ecstatic about that. Of course, he won the Futurity about 20 minutes earlier, too. So he's got a real strong hand for the Juvenile Turf Sprint in the Breeders' Cup. And Todd had a real good-looking winner here with Sweet Melania in the Jessamine. So the two-year-olds coming out of here at Keeneland are all going to be well-regarded when we go over to California for the Breeders' Cup.
Well, we should also include Peace Achieved's win in the Bourbon, and I know a lot of people are going to say that the horse you want out of that race is Vitology, who came from far back, and we talked to Brendan Walsh about Vitology, but Peace Achieved was well ridden by Miguel Mena, and gets the W. The two performances, Marty, that I think got overwhelmed and overshadowed by the grade ones. There were two sprint efforts. We'll talk about Spice Perfection in a minute when you update everybody on the filly and mare sprint. But I want to mention, because even I didn't have a lot of time to discuss them this week, that effort by Engage in the Phoenix and Whitmore's performance, frankly, in defeat, and then Stubbins's win for Doug O'Neill in the Woodford. These are horses that were on nobody's radar screen heading to Breeders' Cup, and they're going to be in those fields. And I think they bear some real examination.
Well, I mean, that's the way it always happens, whether it's the road to the Breeders' Cup or the Derby or the Oaks or whatever. You have late comers and horses who just suddenly, surface in the final round of preps. So, they're all legitimate. I had a little personal angst about the Phoenix when somehow Hog Creek Hustle was not fourth, and I would have had a 50-cent super in there. And my daughter was in from Seattle. She hadn't been to Keeneland since she was about 10, and we're watching the race on the apron. And I don't go back and watch the replay, Steve, and see if Hog Creek Hustle doesn't look like he passes recruiting ready for fourth. And it's just an amazing, brutal beat photo, because the photo shows that recruiting ready held on for fourth by a sliver. And, it cost me a couple grand. So, anyway, that's going to be my enduring recollection of Phoenix. Engage got a great trip. He really ran good. And at the eighth pole, there were six horses who could win if they kicked. And I don't know what to make out of the race. The number came back pretty good. Well, it was about 100 or so, maybe a little bit under, but I don't know.
98 in there. And that doesn't, that on paper, that's not going to win a sprint that's got Imperial Ant and Chance a Lot and maybe Omaha Beach and Firenze Fire, Hog Creek, Promises Fulfilled. What is Moquette doing out of this? Have you talked to him?
I have not, but Dale says he's running back with Promises Fulfilled, even though he's run two really bad ones in a row.
Of course he is.
Why wouldn't Moquette run? So I'm sure he'd. Has anybody ever answered, why is the Philly Mare Sprint 7/8 and the other one 3/4? It's just kind of a.
Well, the sprint started out. I'll tell you why that. I assume that happened, and we could certainly get somebody from that era in the Breeders' Cup intelligentsia. But I think the concept was that if you made the filly and mare sprint, which was added at Monmouth, 2007.
Right.
And Merrifield, who I every time she ran, I managed to somehow cash. She, speaking of Doug O'Neill, I assume that they did that, Mark, so that if you had a pure three-quarter sprinting filly or mare, they might still go in the sprint. And the 7/8, you know, is a different animal. And so if it might have appealed to sort of middle distance horses cutting back, you know, that wouldn't be sharp enough. I mean, it's nice that there's a filly and mare sprint, but, you know, some of the best moments in Breeders' Cup sprint history involved fillies and mares running in it. And that was sort of blunted by the addition of a filly and mare sprint.
Okay. There we go.
That's my guess. That's a speculative. Well, before we talk about this weekend and about the last couple of days, go ahead with your filly and mare sprint. Advance right now, because it is your race. It's been your race forever.
Well, I mean, we had the two favorites didn't race last weekend. We had two preps last weekend with the Thoroughbred Club here at Keeneland and the L.A. Woman out at Santa Anita, and the two favorites had already run, they being Covfefe and Come Dancing for Carlos Martin. Spice Perfection was unbelievable in the Thoroughbred Club of America. It was one of those things where they're off. Oh, man, you lose. You know, it was one of those things. And I called Peter Miller after. He wasn't here for the race. I called him, you know, 6 minutes after the race was run, and he was in it amongst friends or something, because he was just delirious almost, saying that was just of all the races he's ever run horses in, he said that was one of the greatest ever in terms of a horse overcoming adversity and winning. So he threw in a caveat, though, that's thinking that off the layoff, he was hoping that she didn't run her Breeders' Cup effort in that race. So anyway, Brad Free has been making the lines on the Saturday races. He's got Covfefe 5-2, Come Dancing 3-1, Spice Perfection, the 4-1 third choice off that big effort. And then you got a couple of turnbackers potentially if they go ahead and commit to the filly mare sprint, those being Guarana for Chad Brown and Secret Spice for Richard Baltus. They would add a lot of intrigue, I think, in terms of their cutting back from the longer races to the 7/8. So Selcourt ran big off the bench for Sadler. She's listed as fifth choice here in this race, and Lady Ninja, the one who beat her, the exclaimer for Baltus, looks like they're committing to the race too. So it looks like we might have as many as, you know, 12 to 14 in there. Coming out of the race, I asked Arnaud Delacour if I should take Chalon off our list of contenders. He said no. I know that Luch is wanting to run Heaven Has My Nikki. She'd be the long shot. Serengeti Empress, she would be, she's going to list the filly mare sprint as second choice, second preference. And they're going to go first in the distaff. And then Stormy Embrace, Kathleen O'Connell wanting to run her, but I see where Mike Welsh, my colleague, wrote a little something about having some travel difficulties in terms of getting out of South Florida.
What about Danuska's My Girl and Fleur de Lamar?
Don't know about either of those, but Fleur de Lamar did work recently at Santa Anita, so I assume Baffert is thinking about running her in this race.
Didn't she ran the other day, didn't she?
I think she scratched.
She scratched out of that spot? Yeah, she was. I know she was entered.
Yeah.
All right, so he's going to wait for that. And what about Bellafina? What's the latest from Simon Callahan?
They want to run. You know, Brad must have something against that horse because he's got her 30-1. So I just think it's, you know, 30 can mean 90. So, but, you know, she likes that track. So I would think she'd be in with a decent chance.
Well, and a lot of people have been saying that this is what, you know, this is what she's meant for, or been meant for all along. You've got Jose Cameo involved with Minute to Stardom, the Fleet 3-year-old, and Baltus, Lady Ninja, and Dawn the Destroyer for Kieran McLachlan.
Yeah, she ran big. She, you know, a couple more jumps. If it had been 6 furlongs and 3 jumps, she might have won the TCA.
Well, there's Marty's update, and of course, the whole, all 14 races, and we'll be checking in with everybody, with Jay and Dave Grenig. Dave later for the Juvenile, Jay for the Classic, and Jay's got a second race this year, and we'll start to circulate. Mike does the sprint. We'll get to Steve Anderson, etc. We'll make the rounds with everybody. Turning to the action on the racetrack yesterday, got to make note, Mart, of the couple of things. You mentioned Sweet Melania already. Honest Mischief came back for Judd Mont and Chad Brown. This was on Wednesday. 88 Buyer with that win. And then yesterday, the unbelievable record that Graham Motion continues to build with First Time North America.
Yeah, that horse's name was Tuned and ran a big one first time in this country. And there was another one in there that Chad had. I think that might have been a first time North America too, that just flopped. He was 4-5. So of course Chad's 4-5 in pretty much every race.
Well, and the one, you know, the one that won early in the card, that Passive Investing, okay, I mean a little under even money, and won well, drew in actually, and I think that was a you know, a little bit of a, that one could have been 3-5, but Tuned, yeah, Tuned pays over 9-2. And then later, I got to mention that seventh race, because here's our man, Brendan Walsh, with a first time North America as well. Zafel at 20-1.
Yeah, $40 winner, and one off real nice.
Well, and yeah, and then in that allowance, Sacred Life came back out of Saratoga and ran very well for Chad and Pletcher. With, it's funny, Jeremy Plonk was with us Wednesday, and he talked about Cairo Cutie dropping down and a gaudy record. Pletcher 6-8 doing this at Keeneland.
Dropping. I had no idea.
How about that?
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, that gets us to today. A couple of thoughts before we talk about the Queen Elizabeth. And speaking, by the way, Mart, of first time. Well, I'll save the first time North America for the Saturday discussion. The Buffalo Trace, Franklin County, we got two scratches, right?
Well, I got the early scratches, and neither one, neither Hotshot Anna nor
Goldwood.
Goldwood is out. Rocky Policy and Hotshot Anna are both entered back for Sunday. And both of their trainers told me they'll come out. Those aren't early scratches yet, but we also have Change of Control for your girl, Michelle Lovell, is out, and number 15, La Dame Blanche for Ian Wilkes is out. So it looks like we're going to have a field of original cast of 16 down to 11 with five scratches, but still a great race, as you know, and Girls Know Best for Eddie Keneally was terrific off the bench at the Churchill September meet, and Morticia, of course. She may or may not be making her final career start here today. If she runs Giant, Rusty will consider running her back in against the boys in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Of course, that's because it is a 5/8 race as opposed to down the hill. That'd be the only condition under which he would run her back. But, yeah, good field here today.
Who'd you pick? Because Oleksandra now, I think, gets a big look in here with some of those speeds that came out.
Yeah, there's a lot of speed still in there. Girls Know Best, I think, is going to get a good trip from the outer. I've defaulted into on my official picks with Morticia, but that's a little bit chalky, and I think the Girls Know Best might be real tough to catch.
Well, and also before we start talking about Saturday, I want to alert people to a third race, basically a second level allowance, going a mile and a 16th on the main. And sneaking into this race is Gray Magician for Peter Miller, Gary Barber, and Aaron Wellman, and the Eclipse people. Harvey Wallbanger, back from Korea. And very sneakily, that Declaration of War colt, NYC, who breaks the maiden at Saratoga and came back very quietly, stretched out successfully at Belmont, and now gets a two-turn debut. This is that Waterford homebred that really feels like, you know, a nice horse in the making for Pletcher. How about that six-horse field?
Yeah, it's a good one. We've got one like that tomorrow, too, the third race. It's a
yep.
six-horse field with American Anthem et al. So, yeah, you never know what you're going to get around here at Keeneland in terms of when the overnight comes out and you get all these stakes horses and allowances.
Well, and also later today, there's a 6.5 maiden special for boys, 3 and ups. And Dallas Stewart has got a horse from Windstar and China Horse Club, Executive Branch, the Bernardini, that was a $450,000 Keeneland yearling. And that caught my eye. Buff has got a firster in here, and this is a group of mostly, I think, all three-year-olds, a lot of which probably should have broken their maiden already. You know, those horses that, you know, even at this point in the year, three-year-olds that are still kind of nice. So keep an eye on that group. Let's turn to Saturday, and right in the opener, Marty, before we get to some of the other spots, here's another situation for Brendan Walsh, first time North America, and this is absolutely a turf writer's dream. There's all kinds of things you can play around with the two. Eve Harrington, it'll all be all about Eve in that first race.
Well, I've got Lemon Chill picked in there. She was awesome at Churchill for Donnie K. Von Himmel, and she's my pick in that opener tomorrow. By the way, we're going to have a big crowd here today and tomorrow with all the Suey Pig Arkansas folks coming in for the football game tomorrow night. So it's going to be quite the festive crowds here the next couple of days.
Well, have Dan Pites get out there somewhere and do the calling of the hogs. Nobody does it like Dan Pites.
His name is not Dan Pites to Dan Pites. He's Pats. He calls himself Pats.
I don't make me try that. But, you know, back to Eve Harrington. Mart, you better make like Addison DeWitt, and you better come up with, buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy race. I mean, there better be some clever stuff tied into Eve Harrington.
Your cultural adeptness is a little bit beyond me here, Jake.
Well, it's the movie. Eve Harrington is the character in All About Eve.
You're not talking to Steve Haskin here. You're talking to Marty.
Do yourself a favor and try to. It's one of my absolute favorites, favorite films of all time. You may have seen my tweet. Did you see my Colonel's Dark Temper tweet?
I did. I didn't know that he would have been that close earnings wise to Arch for Jinx.
I was amazed. I was shocked when I saw that he had made $786,000. And granted,
didn't he win the West Virginia Derby when it was like $750,000? So there's $450,000 right there.
Right.
He won another big purse too.
Yeah, I mean he's earned a lot of money. He was a $35,000 October yearling at Fasig for AJ Foyt, and he's been absolutely super productive. Moving on into this card, you got some good maiden races on both surfaces, and it all leads up to the Grade One Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup. Some thoughts, Mark?
Well, I mean, Chad could go 1, 2, 3 in here. His horses might be the first three favorites, those being Cambier Park, Cafe Americano, and Regal Glory. I was looking back and trying to document all the times that Chad has run 1, 2, 3 in graded stakes anywhere, and it's like herding cats. It's getting out of control. But the ones that I did write about were he had two of them last year. He had the Jenny Wiley and the Beverly D. They're grade ones. And then this year he's had the Manhattan and the Diana. And this could be another one. I've got it picked with the Cafe Americano, who was just terrific in capping that four-stake sweep on Arlington Million Day in Chicago when she won the Pucker Up. I'm going to pick her over Cambier Park, who, of course, was fabulous in winning the Del Mar Oaks, and Regal Glory, who had a terrific Saratoga meet. So 6-3-9 all Chad for me in the QE2.
What do we know about the Invader? Anything?
That being not Magnetic Charm, although she is owned by Her Majesty the Queen. That's how we list her name in DRF and the PP. She ran a She actually has the highest buyer in the field, Magnetic Charm does, with a 95 out of the Grade 2 Canadian in which she faced older. I don't know a lot about the filly you're referring to, a Castle Lady. She was a Group 1 winner in France in May. She won the French 1000 Guineas. She is a Godolphin homebred, and her jockey and trainer I've never heard of. I guess Marcus or Steve Anderson have heard of these guys, but she is the wild card of the group, and we'll see what she has tomorrow.
So we could add Mikel Barcelona to Eve Harrington as obscurities.
A lot of other things I don't know about Vic.
The greatest Marty McGee, everybody, and of course Keeneland will not run on Monday, right? No Columbus Day action for Keeneland.
Never have.
Nope. So they'll pick it up next week, Mart. Marching forward. I appreciate it.
Talk to you next Friday, buddy.
Marty McGee, everybody. We're going to stay right here, and we've got Jay Bridman standing by from the Daily Racing Form. It's a Daily Racing Form superfecta today with Marty and Jay and Dave Grenig and Ron Gierkink. Jay Bridman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, no, you just the key, though, is to make sure you just wheel Marty on top. And then you're good to go from there.
Exactly, exactly. And we always, and almost always do, Marty, the leadoff, so often.
He's our George Springer. He bats leadoff.
Well, I won't bring up the Dodgers, although I don't think you're a Dodger fan.
No, this is an Astros household.
That's right, the Houston, Houston base. So you guys,
my wife's from Houston, so yeah. That's weird. Yeah, I grew up in L.A. I was never a Dodgers fan. My favorite player when I was a kid was Roberto Clemente, so I've been a Pirates fan, and they haven't been competitive for very briefly over the last 20 years if they had moments of glory.
Did you?
In fact, their two best pitchers were starting in recent years, both started yesterday, one for Tampa, and
that's right.
And Cole, so there you go. Anyway, moving on.
Well, actually, you made me think of something, though. I didn't know that about you with Clemente and the Bucks. You must have, at some point, had a chance to meet John Galbraith, no? From his ownership angle?
You know, I never did, unfortunately. Yeah, I never met Mr. Galbraith, which would have been great because, you know, with obviously naming a horse, Roberto, who was a top horse, and then, you know, owning the team and whatnot, but I never did. My one thing that I did get to do is because my mother was from Pittsburgh and I had a grandmother back there when I was a kid, I did go to two games at Forbes Field. So that's sort of like an old memory of mine. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Actually, that's tremendous. Well, on this topic, and in fact, before we talk racing news and items, we'll talk about a passing because Sherwood Chillingsworth, certainly there's a guy that you had many, many dealings with. Your thoughts about Chili?
Chili was great. You know, I'm a huge fan of what he and guys like Doc Robbins and Clement Hirsch did with Oak Tree for all the years that they were able to race at Santa Anita and all the benevolence that they did and not all the money that was earned during that meet got reinvested right back into racing to all different kinds of charities and benevolence towards the sport. They were the host of a number of Breeders' Cups while Oak Tree was in charge of the fall meet at Santa Anita. And just always wanted the best for the sport, you know, put the health of the sport over the bottom line always. And just, you know, a class guy, had a really interesting background being born in Hawaii and then coming over to the mainland and becoming a successful real estate developer. And he had a number of good horses, too, as you know. And he was part of a group that, for instance, won the Met Mile with Forzando. But just a class guy and just, you know, one of those, just a gentleman and always wanted the best for the sport and had a good long life. Fortunately, he was 93.
Yeah, and we'll talk later to Tom Robbins himself, whose father, you know, with with Chili, started Oak Tree, and Tom basically grew up, Tom and his brothers grew up with Chili close by at hand. So Tom will pay tribute later in the show, and Hammer as well. And I suppose Jeff Siegel might even pitch in as well.
I'm sure all of those people could speak to that, sure.
Well,
Tom
Jay,
especially, though, you know, because it is because of Doc Robbins.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm looking forward. I haven't talked to Tom in a while, so I'm looking forward. Jay, you had a very busy week. The news was hot and heavy on a almost daily. You had an important item toward the Classic.
Yeah, it's just that time of year where there's just a lot of things to keep track of, and it just turned out that this week there were just a number of things related to that race that kept coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday with Mongolian Groom. They're now going to nominate for the $200,000. And I wrote a little news item when I got the news that they were going to do it. But then I did a longer piece on sort of the history and lore of how the program now to nominate race or horses of racing age works, and compared to sort of the supplemental era, and going back and putting some historical perspective on how the Breeders' Cup has evolved over the years in terms of the fees and how it works. So I'd encourage people to read that. I think it gives you a pretty good background. I mean, for instance, the very first Breeders' Cup in 1984, Wild Again his owners had to pay $360,000 for him to run in the Classic, which he had to pay 12% of the purse of the race back then. So the Classic then was worth $3 million. And they had to put up $360,000 for him to run. And in those days, like, for instance, a few years later with Viacola and Best Pal, you had to pay each year you ran if you weren't previously nominated. You had to pay the supplemental fees. And they started to change the rules in the mid-90s. Skipaway was one of the first that benefited by it because he ran two straight Breeders' Cups. But when they paid the first time, it was for the rest of your racing career at that point. And the fees have trended downward over the years. But occasionally there's some stallions or horses that aren't nominated to the program early on. And I kind of listed the fees that are that apply if that happens. And then, you know, the other news was sort of jockey or race participation related. Elate, after finishing second in the Spinster, Mott, going on with her to the Classic. One of the other horses that he had under consideration, Tacitus, is going to take the rest of the year off, but he'll race next year at age four. And his other horse, he had three potentially for the Classic. Now he's down to two with Tacitus being out. His third is Yoshida, and he'll have a new rider because Joel Rosario, who's been riding him, is going to move over and ride McKenzie. McKenzie will have a new rider for the first time after having for his first 13 races, Mike Smith, which we knew Mike Smith was off. Baffert announcing on Wednesday that Rosario had picked up the mount. So those were some of the news items regarding that race.
Well, and of course, a couple of other pieces that are going to affect things. The Omaha Beach story. Let's start some of the recaps, Jay, there, because I mean, everybody is just so impressed with Mandela on a going basis. But this was really remarkable. Astounding, actually.
They ran a remarkable race. His first start nearly 6 months the other day, and beating a top-class sprinter in Chancelot in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. It was a terrific race. But he's kind of in no-man's land now towards the Breeders' Cup. That was his first start in nearly 6 months. He's got to come back now in 5 weeks, and Mandela's sort of pondering what the options are. And, you know, they all have their pluses and minuses to them. The sprint is what when I talked to him the other day, he said, I haven't made any decisions yet, and I'm not going to until next week because I want to see how the horse trains and all those kinds of things that a guy who's been doing this for more than 40 years and is in the Hall of Fame does on a daily basis when he observes the animal. But he said at the moment he was leaning towards the sprint because he just thought it was it might end up being too big of an ask to sort of let him down off that race. And then with the training that you need in the interim to build him back up to go a mile and a quarter off just that one sprint comeback race against horses that are seasoned at that distance. Remember, Omaha Beach has never run a mile and a quarter. The only time he would have would have been the Kentucky Derby when he was scratched. So he's never even gone that far. So these are all things that he needs to consider. And he's just it's just owing to him being behind the eight ball with this horse for the campaign at this time of year. The original plan when he was training so well at Del Mar was to run in the Shared Belief and then come back in the Awesome again. So you go mile, mile and an eighth, and then go on to the Classic. Well, then, because of the training hiccups he had, by the time they could get him back to the races, it was for the sprint last week. And it's just, now it's like, do you go back and you come back in the sprint, which is worth twice the money, for instance, as the Dirt Mile, and also historically is more significant than the Dirt Mile when it comes towards an Eclipse Award. You know, Omaha Beach, he's really playing catch-up for the three-year-old title. So, you know, if he ran in the Classic and won, obviously he'd have a huge chance of being three-year-old champ, but I don't know that Mandela thinks he's quite ready to run a mile and a quarter. The Dirt Mile, it might be the best progression for him coming off a six-furlong race, but what does it really get you at the end of the day? And it's half the money of the sprint. It's one-sixth the money of the Classic. And just historically, it's not been a race that determines Eclipse Awards. So now you look at the sprint where if he were to, which is by my way of looking at it, the toughest race and the best race that we're going to see on Breeders' Cup Day if that field holds together with Mottoli and Imperial Hint and Chancelot, and now let's say Omaha Beach goes in there. It's an incredible race. But if he wins that race, he could be Sprinter of the Year. And in terms of his three-year-old aspirations, you know, he'll have three grade one wins, one in the Arkansas Derby and two against older horses in three and up sprint type races. And then it would just really, it might depend on what happens with Code of Honor in the Classic. And these are all just sort of the scenarios that could play out. But the bottom line is, you know, Mandela has to do what he thinks is best for the horse on November the 2nd. And this is a horse who's had hiccups in his training that prevented him from running for nearly 6 months, and he's run one time since the Arkansas Derby in a six-furlong race. And that and what you have to do to potentially run a mile and a quarter is what is, has him – those are the things that are ruminating through his mind, and it all depends on, obviously, how the horse comes out of the race and what he thinks he's capable of doing in his next start on November the 2nd. It's not like he's got – two more months to get him ready to go a mile and a quarter. He doesn't.
Right.
So that's kind of what he's wrestling with.
It's one. There's been nothing but fascinating developments the last 2 weeks between Code of Honor committing, between now this week the word that Team Engage is considering a return to Breeders' Cup for a career. For a career finale, and then Omaha Beach, you know, bursting back on the scene. These are the kinds of storylines you really want, you know, going into, you know, what bills itself as a world championship and you know, the highest level.
No, if that comes to pass, I mean, obviously, if Enable comes, that just. It's like the Spinal Tap going to 11 to get her when it didn't look like all year that it was going to be part of the plan. The you know, her getting beat in the arc might really have kept her in play for this. I think if she'd have won the arc last week, they probably would have. They might have just sailed off into the sunset with that being. But like you said, now it's at least being considered, and we'll see what they decide next week. But. That would be something if she came. But even if she doesn't, I mean, you know, like I was just outlining, I mean, that if Omaha Beach goes in the sprint, even if he doesn't go in the sprint, that race is incredible. With, I mean, Mottoli and Chancelot and Imperial Hint are all terrific sprinters, I mean, world-class sprinters. And to get all them in the same race and then potentially Omaha Beach as well, man, oh, man, that is some race.
Well, and the funny thing is the sprint has been a little bit of a meager portion the last several years. One of the early stalwart events on a Breeders' Cup, and it's had trouble filling up with all the opportunities for horses to do other things. In fact, this came up with Marty talking about the filly and mare sprint, and then of course the advent of the Dirt Mile drawing away as well. It'd be good for the sprint to have a major showcase again.
It really would, and those are all good points. Obviously, fillies used to run in the sprint before there was a filly and mare sprint. You'd get the occasional filly running in the race. Safely Kept, obviously, the most famous of them all. And then you've got the Dirt Mile, which if there wasn't a Dirt Mile, you'd probably have Catalina Cruiser in the sprint instead of the Dirt Mile as an example for this year. But the Dirt Mile is a terrific race. I mean, you get a really good race, but to your point, there's just more options for horses. And you might even get an occasional now horse who goes in the turf sprint who might have taken a shot on the dirt if there hadn't been a turf sprint too. So there's just more options for these horses. But these other races, the turf sprint's just been a terrific race. It gets a big field. It's a great gambling race each year.
Yep.
So there's lots of options, as you said. But boy, this year the sprint is, I think it could be the best race of the whole weekend if all the ones that potentially look like they're going to go there end up going.
Well, we'll talk, not today, but we'll talk to Mike Welsh probably next week. Mike covering the sprint as usual for the form. And you're going to be covering the Juvenile Fillies, yes?
Yes, I'm covering the Juvenile Fillies. Kind of an interesting wide-open race at the moment, but Wicked Whisper certainly looks like she's a main player off her victory in the Frisette. It looks like Frank's Rocket, who finished second in the race, is going to potentially go on and try two turns for the first time, as would Wicked Whisper. They've both never been around two turns. And the big two-turn prep was won by British Idiom, and she certainly looked like she's going to be a major player in this race. The local favorite out here is obviously Bast. She had a hard-fought win in the Chandelier last time, and then you've got Donna Veloce, who's just an incredibly exciting prospect for Simon Callahan. She's only run once. It was in a maiden race, and she got a 91 buyer speed figure. She won like she's a future superstar, but she's going to be taking the worst of it from an experience and distance standpoint. She's never gone two turns, and she's only had the one out, but off natural ability, she looks like she could be as good as any of them. So it's a very intriguing race with horses coming from different locales and with different aptitudes at the distance. So that's kind of the overview of that race at the moment. And then you've got a couple of horses like for Doug O'Neill with Comical, who ran a big race last time chasing, she made Bast work for it last time, that's for sure. And he's also got Lazy Daisy, who won the Win and You're In Pocahontas. And Cassie's got a couple of prospects and Perfect Alibi, who was a distant second in the Alcibiades, and then 260, who won the big My Dear Girl race at Gulfstream a couple of weeks ago. Pretty good race.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Doug O'Neill and his pair, Lazy Daisy and
Comical.
Comical, thank you. I want to take every opportunity to drive home the fact that for everybody, industry-wide, stakeholder, fan, and horse player alike, Doug O'Neill and Oscar De La Torre cannot be commended enough and lauded enough for what they continue to do in the face of the pressures out and around Santa Anita. Doug has been the most vocal and the most just tireless defender of the industry there, and deserves all of our appreciation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm glad there are some people out here in the sport who are standing up for it. There need to be more. There needs to be more people cracking back against the lunacy that has been espoused by some of the fringe elements that are trying to force their will onto the sport.
Well put. Jay, one last note, because it's one of the my favorite features annually, and that is your expanded notations of the Road to Derby and Road to Triple Crown. Your thoughts about last week's two juvenile efforts, the Champagne and the Futurity?
Sure. So the Champagne and the Breeders' Futurity were both last weekend. They're interesting races, Steve, from the standpoint that the Champagne's, you know, one turn mile, and the Breeders' Futurity is a two turn race. So they're different races to evaluate, and they're both potentially, they're both winning your ends for the Breeders' Cup, as in addition to being early point scoring kind of races towards the Kentucky Derby. In the case of the Champagne, 'Tis the Law who won the race, and I thought was really good, is not going to come to the Breeders' Cup. It looks like he's going to go to Churchill and have one more start going two turns. But I thought Greenlight Go ran a good race, finishing second there. He was hounded the whole way, and he looks like, I've never seen him in person, but just watching the tape of him, he looks like he's huge. And I think he might be well-suited by being able to sort of gallop on the front end going two turns. So I'm looking forward to seeing him potentially come out here and run in the Breeders' Cup. As far as the Breeders' Futurity goes, I really thought the win in that race by Maxfield was dynamic. I really liked the way he closed and won and drew away. He had won a one-turn mile in his debut at Churchill Downs. He was coming back on a relatively short rest. It was only 3 weeks off his debut. As I noted in the analysis, the one quibble I've got with him is he just hasn't been breaking well, and he just needs to. He's not going to be able to always get away with that, but he's only had a couple of starts. He can certainly, I think, do better with that. But I really liked his race a lot, and I think he's got potential to be a major player in the juvenile, let alone going on towards the Kentucky Derby. So I thought both winners were very good.
I agree.
Respective ways, but Maxfield being proven around two turns is and being by street sense, it was a Breeders' Cup juvenile winner and a Kentucky Derby winner. He's got a lot going for him.
Well, and it looks like a second year in a row for Brendan Walsh to make a presence felt. Of course, plus Caparfait, you know, last year. And I got to find out I'm glad he came up. I'm going to find out from Brendan what's going on with him. Jay, this was terrific. Covered a lot of ground. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend. And I think starting Monday, it's all cup all the time.
Well, pre-entry day is not for another couple of weeks yet. So
yeah, but still.
We still got a little ways to go. But yeah, it's you're right. All the preps we're getting all the preps out of the way, and then it'll be just focused on who's in and who's out and how they're all training.
Well, hope everybody keeps them healthy and happy, and everybody that works so hard to get there gets their opportunity. Jay, really appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much.
DRF Pridman, everybody, and you can listen to Jay, of course, on Thoroughbred LA. Remind you about that. We're going to stay right here, and Nick Tamaro is going to join us. No need for a break. We're going to stay here, Deja, and he'll pick up. He's waiting for us. He's heading to the airport to get to the track. Is Nick, and I want to get a couple of thoughts in from him about last week, because we couldn't connect. We kind of pushed a little bit late last week, and then by the time it got to be, I don't know, 11:45, it was too late for Nick. So, keep trying him. I imagine we will get to him. And if you don't, I'll give you the. Yeah, if that doesn't happen, you can skip over toward Ron Gierkink, and we'll make our trip over to Woodbine for those events. So, if that you let me know what you're doing. You know, one thing I didn't. One thing that Jay also wrote, and I wasn't going to bring it up with him, but I never had a chance this week. It kind of got shunted off to the side. Richard Lundy passed at home in Ohio last Saturday, esophageal cancer. And Lundy, of course, trained any number of really nice horses, including Opening Verse, Blushing John, Cardenascra, and more, and won a lot of big races. So, Richard Lundy. Ron Gierking waiting for us, and so we'll turn right to Ron and welcome him back in a few weeks removed from the last big weekend at Woodbine, and it's Pattison International Weekend, the Canadian and then the Arctic, the E.P. Taylor.